From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. The issue of whether the company Energy Solutions should be allowed to permanently store 700,000 tons of depleted uranium at its facility in Tooele County is complicated. But here's one of the most basic questions at play in this story. How do you account for or even regulate waste that's going to get more and more radioactive for tens of thousands, even hundreds of thousands of years? For some environmental groups, that's the reason to keep it out of the state. Too many risks, even if they are centuries in the future. But if you're Energy Solutions, is it really fair to hold them to that kind of deep time scenario? The state's decision about this project is on hold, and so today in the program, we're talking about the science, the politics, even the economics of depleted uranium. Join us after the news.
Hi, this is Elaine Clark, one of the producers of Radio West. Our free podcasts are made possible by KUER's generous listeners. If you're a fan, we invite you to put $10 in our tip jar. Text KUER to 85944 to make that donation. Thank you.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. The nuclear waste disposal company Energy Solutions is trying to get approval to store a large proportion of the country's stockpile of depleted uranium at its facility in Tooele County. About a year ago or so, they submitted to the state a technical analysis of how they plan to go about doing that. The idea is to essentially bury some 700,000 tons of this material. Now, it's more complicated than that. It involves this liner system, this cover, some sophisticated fill material to keep it all stable. But what complicates all of this really is the fact that right now, all of this waste fits within the state guidelines. That is to say, it's Class A. But over time, and we're talking a lot of time, it will get hotter and hotter. And eventually, it will become Class B and Class C. But that's tens of thousands, even hundreds of thousands of years away. Recently, the state responded to the Energy Solutions proposal with a 200-page safety report that raised concerns. And so for now, the public comment period has been put on hold so Energy Solutions can respond to those concerns. And all of this is just giving us a chance to talk about the questions in this story. And we invite you to join the conversation today. 801-585-WEST is the number. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. We're going to begin today with Judy Faes. She, of course, is KUER's environmental reporter. She has been covering the environment for a number of years now. She used to work for the Salt Lake Tribune. She's joining us here in the studio. And Judy, welcome back.
Hi, Doug.
So did I lay that out about right? Because the state had questions. They weren't willing to sign off for now. And Energy Solutions is going to respond to that. Is that sort of where we are right now?
Yeah. It's interesting, though, that depleted uranium is now an issue because really the state approved and the federal government approved the disposal of depleted uranium as a Class A waste, I think, in the 90s.
Knowing that in 10,000 years it could be B and C or whatever?
I think that that's actually a really interesting point because I don't think they really thought of it that way. Mm. At the time, I think that there was a sense that you could reuse depleted uranium. And in fact, it has been reused. It's used for bullets. It's reprocessed and essentially re-enriched. So while some of this depleted uranium is ready for disposal now, it changed the conversation a little bit because if you have a small amount of it, that's not such a big deal. But if you have 770,000 tons of it, all in the same spot, that does sort of change the equation. It basically concentrates the radiation. And that's like every other kind of hazardous material, the concentration is a big factor.
So how much is out there? I mean, if Energy Solutions wants to bring 770,000 tons, what proportion of the country stockpile is that? Is there a lot left? It's still being made, of course. I mean, created or whatever.
It is. Yeah. Well, back about a decade ago, there was a question of, I think there was about 1.4 million tons that were out there that needed a resolution. And for a part of that, there are other facilities that handle it, some that reconfigure the DU. And then there's another waste site in Texas that came online just a few years ago that also is licensed to accept this kind of material. So there's the federal stockpile from its old enrichment activities, not only reactor fuel, but also military uses of nuclear materials, bomb making.
Yeah.
And that's the waste that we're talking about now. Some of the waste is, as I say, already going into that West Texas facility.
And some of it's temporarily being stored here on the Energy Solutions
property.
Yeah,
a few thousand barrels of it, yeah.
Now, here's where it gets complicated, of course. It's less dangerous. Here's one thing that Energy Solutions has said about this depleted uranium, one thing that they point out from time to time, is that some of the fissionable radionuclides, some of the really hot stuff, has been removed during the milling process. So what the point they make is this stuff is actually less dangerous than the uranium that they're taking out of the ground that's there naturally. You want to say something about that?
Well, I guess the issue again is the volume, and I hate to bring this up, but remember what President Clinton said. He said it depends on what your definition of is, because if you talk about is it less hazardous now, that's true according to the law, according to the regulation, but if you talk about those large quantities over tens of thousands of years, say, I think the time frame I've been given is about 35 to 40,000 years, then it isn't considered safe for Utah. So I think that the question then is how do you look at this in deep time? And should we really, can we really even model or understand what the world will look like in 10,000 years, and who knows, you know, maybe we'll have a way to take all that DU and turn it into some kind of cash commodity. Or maybe the world will be so different that there won't be the hazard of leaving the DU in a shallow disposal. It's just really hard to say. So it's a complicated question for what's really a simple problem, and that is, how can we be sure that the waste that we take is going to be safe for the people who live here and the taxpayers who live here?
For now, they are safe, though. Are they not?
Yeah.
Would be. If they stored that waste, it's only Class A waste right now. So for 35 to 40,000 years, Utahns are going to be okay. I know that sounds facetious, but for argument's sake, it's true.
Well, it will be within the limits that are allowed under Utah state law.
Sure.
However, if you think about it, you and I think it's about 14,000 years ago, we were underwater here up on the hill at the university. And that disposal site is lower than where we are now. So all of that stuff would be inundated potentially if there was another climate cycle where we had Lake Bonneville rising. Again, I know engineers are really good at calculating what it means numerically for that to happen, but realistically, it just seems like an enormous task.
But let's say that it's determined that another place, Texas, would be safer, or that it should be stored on site, which is sometimes an argument you hear too. Those places are going to be vulnerable to the same kinds of geological questions that you're asking in the West Desert, are you not? I mean, who's to say that Texas won't be covered in water in 40,000 years? Or do you know what I mean? I guess the question that Energy Solutions must be asking is it really reasonable for you to put us on such a deep timeline We can account for up to this many years, but you have to be reasonable, and you can't hold us to a million years in the future.
The one distinction between the Texas side and the Utah side is this: Texas side is deep. It's you drive cars down into it and trucks down into it. It's very, very deep, and so
it would be potentially less vulnerable.
A 55-gallon drum is you know, basically 100 or a couple hundred feet down below the land surface,
as opposed to 10 feet below the surface, which is the proposal of Energy Solutions
with
now.
Some rocks on top, which. You know, again, I'm not an engineer, so I can't say. In the safety evaluation report, that's the whole purpose of it, is to ask that question. But again, the bigger question is, you know, if you're Energy Solutions and you have a business model and your resource, your commodity is drying up, and that is low-level radioactive waste, and you need more business. Well, maybe that is a reasonable question to ask. Why are you making me jump through this? You know. Really high hoop.
Yeah.
When they made the regulation 20 years ago, they didn't think that was such a big deal, or they didn't even account for it. But if you're the state of Utah and you have to look into the future, not only into the future of the health and safety of people here, but people who are in this whole basin, maybe that's a different question, and maybe the what's considered reasonable is different. Finally, the one interesting thing about
it does raise the question of what the state's role is in all of this.
It does, and I think it really goes to your values and your sort of fundamental beliefs about the world and how the world should work. Is the state's job to make it easy for a business to continue operating when the market changes? Is it the state's job to make sure that taxpayers are protected from the potential liability in case there is a rise in the lake level?
Is that part of the dimension of this story, that some critics are saying the state shouldn't be greasing the skids for an industry, that really when it looks at its priorities, Utahns should be on top of that? I mean, is that part of the contention that's being made in this story?
I think that... I can't say what the DEQ is thinking. I think that
the Department of Environmental Quality,
right, yeah. And the Division of Radiation Control. But you know, a few years ago, they had a radiation control board that said, "Look, we can't just take this for granted that DU is Class A waste. We need to make sure that this place is safe for this stuff over time." Really knowledgeable people who have been working with radioactive waste for a long time, have a geology background, they were in a position to say, wait a second, let's reconsider. This is not your run-of-the-mill permit. And so that's where we are now. And the NRC is basically asking the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, the federal agency, is asking the same questions. And they're actually having a comment period on their on their DU regulations this summer.
So how badly does Energy Solutions need this contract?
I don't know the financial answer to that.
Because they're a privately held company.
Right, they're a privately held company. They used to be public, and then they went back to being private. But a couple of years ago, I actually did a request for... records from the state. And it looks like in 2005, when the company did go into a corporate structure, their volume was 26.7 million cubic feet of waste.
They were bringing that in that year. Almost 27 million cubic feet of waste.
Correct. Last year, the number, again, according to the data that Energy Solutions has submitted to the Division of Radiation Control, it was 2.2 million. So it's like
one thirteenth.
And that trend, that downward trend has been consistent in the last few years. So it does seem like they're looking for work, basically. They're looking for some business.
Would it be fair to say they could potentially go out of business if they don't get this this contract?
You know, I'm not in a position to tell that. And as far as I know, that they have not made any public statement along those lines. So I have no idea. They have a lot of other contracts that are out there. I don't know how well that will sustain their business model over time. But they do have other lines of work that they do. And this could just be a new product line that they want to really expand.
But one of the things you've been reporting on is just how intensely competitive this business is. And some of the tactics used by Energy Solutions and its competitors to get business. I wouldn't say ethically questionable, but certainly aggressive.
Mm. I go back to something someone at the NRC told me years ago, and they said, you know, waste is a really dirty business. And I think there's some truth to that. I think that was actually a saying in the garbage business, but this is radioactive garbage, basically. There's been competition. I know that there have been lawsuits over, boy, probably close to 30 years, at least 20 years, where different radioactive waste companies have accused one another of setting up environmental groups as fronts for their competitors. I know Energy Solutions has been the target of those in the past, and EnviroCare before that. And I know that they've been the target of that kind of attack as well.
So basically, organizing environmental groups and others to go and protest projects in these other sites.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Basically, and to challenge their permits and that kind of thing.
Let me ask you finally, there's a big question out there, and that is whether or not 770,000 tons of material, if that's going to be it, if you know, they just seal it up and that's it, or is the door open for more? Is that a question at stake here?
You know, I think that's a good question. But frankly, I don't know the answer to it. I know that what's on the table right now is that 700,000 tons, metric tons, so 770,000 tons, short tons. And so that's what we know about right now. As I said, a decade ago, they were talking about 1.4 million tons. There seem to be other facilities that have popped up that are capable of accepting this material. And so I guess we'll see.
Judy Faze, KUER's environmental reporter. Judy, thanks.
Thank you.
801-585-WEST is the number if you want to join the conversation. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. We'll take a break. Back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're working around this question, or at least one of them. It's complicated, more complicated than this, but how do you plan for something 10,000, maybe even a million years in the future? The nuclear waste disposal company Energy Solutions is looking for approval to store more than 700,000 tons of depleted uranium in Tooele County. Right now, that waste falls within the state's guidelines, which is Class A, but over time, it's going to get hotter and hotter, and that is what has critics worried. We're talking about the science and the politics of this story. You can join us, 801-585-WEST, our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Matt Pacenza is joining us now. He's the executive director of the group Heal Utah, an environmental group focused on energy. The group is, of course, opposed to storing depleted uranium in Utah. And Matt Pacenza, welcome back. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning, Doug.
Let's jump right to that question of, come on, Matt, you guys cannot expect Energy Solutions to account for something that will happen tens of thousands of years into the future. Would you start with that?
Yeah, I think absolutely that everyone needs to acknowledge that there's a tremendous amount of uncertainty about what will happen at that site over hundreds of years, let alone thousands and millions. And so it's perfectly reasonable for everyone to acknowledge that anyone who looks into a crystal ball and claims, you know, I know that this site will be destroyed in precisely this year, or I know that this site will never be destroyed, or any such claims are sort of really impossible to substantiate, that the key word really is in looking in those timeframes would be uncertainty.
Therefore what? I mean, so why shouldn't then Energy Solutions, if it's so uncertain, if there's so much uncertainty, why shouldn't they then be allowed to bring in what is right now anyway, Class A waste?
Yeah, I think we need to take a step back and understand a little bit more about the definition of this waste classification system. And it includes two components. First of all, it includes the issue of the sheer amount of radioactivity it emits day to day. But the second critical part of that component is the duration of the hazard. And so if you go back and look, and Judy was certainly covering these issues then, you go back and look at the early to mid-2000s, and there was a significant debate in the state of Utah that played out in a variety of forums about whether to ban B and C waste or not.
Right.
And a big part of that conversation had to do with timeframes, had to do with, okay, you know, are we comfortable in the state of Utah taking waste that presents a hazard for 100 or 150 years? That's basically Class A. And folks said, yeah, we are. You know, it seems like we can sort of, with a reasonable amount of certainty, assure that fences remain, signs remain, our ability to sort of let the generations to come in the next century plus that this is a hazard, that's a reasonable thing to look forward to.
Right.
But then they actually decided that B and C, which present hazards in the sort of 3 to 5 to 600 year range, was actually not acceptable. That those timeframes, looking ahead that far, it was just too tricky to be assured of, you know, like I say, the integrity of things like fences and signs and institutional memory. And so we would argue that what makes depleted uranium radically different is not just the growing hazard, which is a key piece of it, but the sheer duration of the hazard. And that's why HEAL and groups like us would argue for a solution to material like this, which has it sort of deeply locked away in locations where it's just going to be extremely difficult for future civilizations to sort of stumble upon it. And I think Energy Solutions as a company does a perfectly decent job of storing the material they take now. And I think, you know, if you go out there and check out the site, and certainly I have, that, you know, they have a site enclosed by a fence with trenches dug in the earth, and they place material in there and they shield them with dirt and rock, and they, you know, lots of good signage. They take care of their workers. You know, it's a place that handles the material they take now perfectly reasonably. But we just don't see how anyone with a straight face can argue that level of protection, you know, essentially sort of, you know, a shallow trench in the earth with dirt and rock and metal fences and signage, some concrete, that level of protection is going to suffice for hundreds of thousands or millions of years.
For something like depleted uranium.
Yeah.
That's the difference.
That's the difference. It's the sheer duration of the hazard, and it's the responsibility we have to look far ahead. And so I really think that's why we see this as just a, frankly, a tremendously easy decision for the state of Utah to make. That, you know, it's one thing to say, fine, the West Desert, low precipitation, unlikely to have human civilization there anytime soon, you know, centuries, decades. Yeah. It's a perfectly reasonable place to take the kind of Class A waste that comes to Utah now. But waste that lasts millions of years is just clearly a poor choice, and there are better choices elsewhere.
So what are the places that you have in mind that would work better? The Texas facility Judy mentioned earlier, where it would be quite deep underground, is that one that you think would work?
You know, we're uncomfortable sort of endorsing that as a location. HEAL has not had a chance to look super carefully at their documents and their studies concluding that. It's fair to say it's open now for that material. They received explicit permission to take depleted uranium late last year. They are also open for B and C waste, unlike Utah. It is deeper into the ground. There's sort of additional engineering facilities built into it. But I think it's safe to say if there were a HEAL Texas, I think it's safe to say they would be raising questions about whether, you know, 100 to 200 feet underground or whatever Andrews is, you know, may not be quite the answer as well. Folks do mention a couple other sites that I'll put out there.
Yeah, you mentioned your sites. What sites? Do you endorse any at all?
We don't. And we're not a national nuclear waste organization that can watch all these places closely. But
you do think there are places.
I do. And I think it's important for folks to remember this is material owned by the federal government. It's the Department of Energy's material. We put them in charge of enriching uranium for good reasons, security reasons, and they have this problem. And when Judy spoke about 20 years ago, folks calling it Class A, one of the big reasons is they didn't perceive of this being a material that would go in vast quantities to commercial locations, to private companies handling it. They perceived of little dribs and drabs, perhaps ending up in places like Clive, but not up to 700,000 tons. And so we asked the basic question of why isn't the federal government itself handling this? And once you open up that question, then you start to look at the Nevada test site, which is a place that Utahns know well because that's where nuclear weapons were tested that we, of course, bore the brunt of. And then in addition, there's a site in New Mexico that folks call WIPP, W-I-P-P, which also has sort of deep underground geological repositories. And let me just touch real quickly on that issue of the nuclear test site in Downwinders that, you know, the Energy Solutions folks have suggested that, you know, we have a national problem. It's sort of our patriotic duty to step up as Utahns and sort of shoulder the burden of the long-term hazard, you know, the relic of sort of our nuclear security program. And I think one of the ways we would answer that, I mean, one is simply to say this site isn't appropriate, but the second one would be to say, look, haven't Utahns done that plenty already? And haven't we already
done our part?
Yeah. And I think it's sort of, almost a bit offensive to ask Utahns yet again to be the state that sort of is required to step up and say, well, you know, we hope it works out over 2 million years, but if it doesn't, I guess it's our patriotic duty. So that it's a somewhat troubling thing, I think, to hear in the long, century-long Utah downwinder context.
Can I come back to that question you were talking about? You've raised this question of why it should, why it shouldn't be, is your point, a commercial or a private facility versus a facility run by the DOE, for example. Why is that important? Because why does it matter that federal government, which it seems to be doing a lot of in the Department of Defense these days, why can't it contract this work out, impose proper regulations, but then contract it out to a company like Energy Solutions to handle?
I guess the distinction would be that you would think the DOE would have the capability to sort of take a step back and take a broad look at a wide range of locations and say which is the most protective. In this case, I don't blame Energy Solutions in the least to trying to get as much business as they can. That's their responsibility to the, you know, the venture capital firm that owns them back east. And, you know, they no longer have shareholders, but on some level, that's their responsibility to the folks that have invested in them. They want as much business as possible and to, you know, maximize the revenue of that company.
So you don't begrudge them that.
I don't begrudge them that in the least. And I think that they, you know, they don't have 10 locations in which to choose to pick the one that's the most protective. They have, you know, Clive. They also have one in South Carolina, but it's not open for business from other states. And so it just makes sense to me that the federal government would take responsibility for it and would sort of take a bigger look. I'd also add that if it's the DOE directly doing it, one would think actually the cost would be slightly lower because they wouldn't also be paying sort of the overhead and profit and so on that Energy Solutions itself would take. So there would seem to be a sort of taxpayer issue here as well. But instead, I think the DOE is sort of eager to get rid of a problem. I would certainly agree with Energy Solutions about one thing, which is that the locations, the material is being held now, and by the way, the specific form the material is in now, not good. It's not, we shouldn't all be pleased with where it's being held now and how it's being held. So the fact that there's a proposal to deconvert it to a stable form, a more stable form, and then to dispose of it in a more permanent location, that's a good thing. It's just that Clive is not the right location. A shallow trench in the desert and a floodplain, there's just no way we can assure that it'll be safe over these timeframes.
The state had, I think, 8 total concerns, significant concerns, in their 200-page report. What do you make of those? Do you concur with some of those, if not all of their concerns?
Yeah, absolutely. I think if anything, we'd probably say that there may be a few more that we think they should have also declared as unresolved. But overall, the report that came out a week ago Monday, we were quite pleased with it. And we think that over the past 18 months or so since Utah hired a consultant from the D.C. area that's been carefully evaluating Energy Solutions study, they've done an excellent job of raising a lot of really important issues and of being skeptical. And one thing I would just sort of challenge, perhaps, that was said earlier, that Energy Solutions sort of didn't know about these issues and now wants time to resolve them, and that's why they've asked for a delay. The truth is, these very issues that they've been going back and forth on constantly over the past 18 months, and the company's known from the very beginning that this consultant was not satisfied with their claims about what might happen in deep time and the long-term analysis and when will the lake rise and will the material be destroyed and unearthed and dissolve into that lake and all these really critical questions about the long-term. They've been being raised for the last 18
so
months.
So what's the deal? Why do they want more time?
I think they were surprised by the degree of skepticism in the report that came out last Monday. And I think they were surprised by the press coverage that framed it as such. And we've been led to believe that the energy solution sort of technical folks were sort of comfortable with that there would be some areas of disagreement, but that perhaps higher ups within the company sort of saw, you know, stories that said, you know, state skeptical of energy solutions claims. And they kind of said, whoa, we need to resolve these things. So ultimately, the delay, I think we're unconvinced that more time will do any good. I think ultimately you can take, you know, the next 1,000 years to prove that you can store, you know, long-lived nuclear waste in a shallow trench in the desert, and you're still not going to get there. But on some level, if we have a few more months to study these issues in more detail and raise more questions, that's fine with us too.
Are they, I wonder if you think that the state's concerns, I mean, some of the things they mentioned, concerns about the liner, this compacted clay that is involved, the covering, which I don't understand what it is necessarily, rock in essence. Are those legitimate concerns? Is this even something that Energy Solutions could change, go deeper, try a different liner, or is that just cosmetics for you?
Yeah, I think when we look at, like, I think there's 8 of these, right? And I think I've been told that maybe up to 5 of them, the company could sort of concede and could sort of say, fine, you know, we'll do that thing you suggested we do, or at least that we model. Right. And I think the companies, and they should speak for themselves, but my understanding is the reason they didn't just sort of say fine right away back 18 months ago has to do with simply financial reasons. It costs more money to put more robust protection in there.
How much more money, though?
I don't know. But one of those, if you look, the 8th of the 8 areas that are unresolved is simply called deep time analysis.
Right.
And that's essentially everything you model from 10,000 years forward. And within that section, if you dig into it, there's just all kinds of big issues about the way the company looks ahead. And I'll just mention one of them quickly that I think we find the most flabbergasting. So every geologist in the world agrees that in these timeframes, the lake levels will rise and Clive will be covered by water. That's an indisputable fact. It's just a question of when, and most likely you're talking about sort of 50 to 100,000 year cycles that the lake rises, it goes back down, it rises, it goes back down. And the way Energy Solutions sort of gets around that problem and the way that their study concludes that the site won't be destroyed is that between now and the next lake, there will be sedimentation that will neatly pile up over the site. It'll slowly pile up and increase and increase and increase to the point where when the next lake level comes, it'll sort of come and gently and carefully sweep away that accumulated sedimentation, but never, in fact, disturb the embankment to the point where it'll disrupt this waste. And then that cycle will repeat again. And I've been sort of playing off some JFK theories. I call it the magic lake theory. So we have the magic lake theory. We have dirt pile on top of it. The lake gently sweeps it away. The dirt returns. And never do we have the lake truly unearth these drums, destroy them, and distribute it widely into the environment. And the last thing I'll say is I don't know if that will happen.
Are they just riffing, or are they using some kind of scientific?
They are controlling the assumptions built into an incredibly elaborate model in order to ward off any scenarios that show that the material will come into significant contact with humans.
I interrupted you. Did you want to?
No, it's fine. I just, the thing we try to say over and over again is, you know, Heal Utah, I've got a background in social science and the humanities. I was an environmental reporter. I'm not a geologist. I have no crystal ball. I don't know what'll happen at Clive over the next hundreds of thousands of years. But I think the most important point is neither do they. No one knows exactly what will happen. And that's why, to us, at the end of the day, you have to guard this material in a location where it's very difficult for people to get to down the road. And a shallow trench in the desert covered by some clay and dirt and rock, it's not it.
So you can't tell deep time what will happen. Can you give me a sense of what you think politically will happen? Is the state, do you figure, inclined to approve this eventually?
I don't think they are. And I think that this report that came out last Monday and the skepticism within it is a good piece of evidence to support that. I would say, secondly, you know, Governor Herbert at his monthly press conference on Thursday, he raised some questions as well. And I would point out that this is the same governor that back in 2009 chose to sit down with the DOE and order these shipments to be halted, ordered ordered the canisters to actually come out of the ground at that point and to be held in the warehouse that they have them above ground at the site now. So Governor Herbert, in his first few months in office, you know, stood up to Energy Solutions and said he wasn't, you know, he wanted this stuff to be studied. That study was done. There's a lot of skepticism about it. He's raising questions at his press conference. Overall, I think we feel like Utah is sending strong signals that we're not sure we're the right place for waste that stays dangerous for so long.
Matt Pacenza, he's the executive director of Heal Utah. Joined us here in the studio. Matt, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
We'll take a break and be back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today on the program, we have been talking about the issue of whether the nuclear waste disposal company Energy Solutions should be allowed to permanently store depleted uranium at its facility in Tooele County. It's a complicated issue, as you've been hearing. Let's take a call from John in Salt Lake City. John, you had a question. Go ahead.
Yes, Doug. I think it would be instructive to ask how much money those guys stand to make from bringing this material into the state of Utah. It's going to be eventually in the hundreds of millions of dollars. There's a handful of people who have historically made a tremendous amount of money off of the establishment of that company when it first got going back in the day. Steve Creamer, who's since left it, with, you know, the guys who built the dam at Quail Creek that failed and so on. And it's always been a very speculative financial venture as it relates to what benefit it brings to the state of Utah. And I really think that this is an economic issue while they're pushing so hard to do this. If they weren't going to make a tremendous amount of money off of this, why would they be saying, oh, it's our patriotic duty, terribly hot material in here?
Well, let's give Mark Walker a chance to respond to that. Joining us now on the program is Mark Walker. He's Vice President of Marketing and Media Relations for Energy Solutions. They're based in Utah with facilities throughout the United States and the world. And Mark Walker is in Tennessee today. He joins us from his office, the Energy Solutions office there. And Mark Walker, welcome to you. Thanks for being with us.
Appreciate it.
Let's start with that first question raised by the caller there just a moment, and it has come up before. The idea, first of all, how badly do you need this contract? I mean, there are those who are suggesting you may, in fact, need this proposal to survive financially. What do you say to that?
No, that's not true. It certainly is a contract that brings revenue to the company. There's no question about that. But it's not a case of if we do not receive this contract or win this contract or we're able to dispose of the UAM that the company is going to go under. There's just no truth to that. It is a contract. It's worth, you know, and we've been very open about that. It's worth between 15 and 20 million a year to us. But you've got, out of that money, you've got taxes that go to Tooele County, roughly a million, maybe a million and a half a year that will go to Tooele County. You've got people that will be employed that are paid from that. So it's not this windfall contract that's going to save the company. The company's in a very good position right now. We're stable. We've got good contracts in place. We're doing good work all over the country and managing material. So, you know, there is money. It is a profitable contract for us,
right?
But it's not, you know, it's not a make or break for the company.
Judy Faze was mentioning she was looking at your waste volume that's been decreasing what looks like precipitously since 2005, 27 million tons to last year's 2.2 million tons, which seems to say to her anyway that there's not as much business here and that, in fact, you may need this contract. How do you respond to that? I wanted to give you a chance.
Well, again, it may need this contract or survive is not the case. Volume has been going down, and that's in part due to our own success to getting these sites around the country cleaned up. You know, at the height of volume that we were taking, we were cleaning up the Rocky Flats complex north of Denver, which is now a wildlife refuge. So if you look at that, we successfully removed the radioactive material, the Class A material, disposed of at Clive, and preserved an area of the country which is now, you know, something that people can enjoy. Wildlife are now inhabiting that area, where before, you know, it was a fenced off contaminated area, much like the Vitreal Mill tailings, which started our society, you know, in the heart of the valley at 33rd South and 5th West, where there's now a golf course and a water treatment plant. So volumes have reduced because there's not as much waste out there to dispose of, but there's still a lot of work that needs to be done. One of those things that needs to be completed, project that needs to be completed, is we need to responsibly manage and dispose of this depleted uranium so it's not an issue, you know, for anybody anywhere in the country. And that's why we feel through this performance assessment that this be done to determine if Clive is a suitable location for the disposal of this material.
What do you, eight concerns in particular by the state. I want to go through a few of these, but give me your general impression of them related to the lining, related to the cover, those kinds of things. How expensive would it be for you to change some of those, you know, your basic proposal? Does it ever get to the point where it's not a cost benefit anymore?
No. You know, we're looking at that right now. We feel confident that in addressing the liner issue, addressing the cover issue, can be done. It can be done reasonably financially. What's good about the performance assessment, Doug, on this is that when they came back with these concerns, we're able to look at these concerns and say, okay, the concerns are that you have the proper liner, that potentially the liner that has been recommended is not exactly what it should be. We want it to be exactly what it needs to be. So, you know, we've got our scientists and our engineers evaluating these concerns, and we'll have a response for the state. And what's important to recognize about these responses is it's got to come back and it's got to say Clive is suitable for the disposal of depleted uranium. If we can't satisfy those concerns from third-party analysis for the disposal of this material, if we're not able to satisfy that, then we're not able to dispose of the material.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we take this very serious. I know that there have been critics who say that we're just, you know, we're ducking the issues. We're just asking for more time. This is a serious issue. We want to make sure that we responsibly do this right if we're able to dispose of this material. And so why not take the time to make sure that we answer the questions correctly, that the science, the methodology, and the engineering that are developed are proven sources or proven ways that we can dispose of this material. So these concerns, we're going to be able to address these concerns. We're confident that we can address these concerns and satisfy the performance assessment that will then indicate and state, yes, because you've addressed these concerns, you can dispose of this material safely, where it will never be an issue for the general public, for the environment, or for our workers.
One thing that came up earlier, Mark, and I wanted to get you to respond to, is this idea that depleted uranium, for obvious reasons, it's not just Class A waste right now, because the volume of it together, when you put 700,000 tons of it in one place, that it changes the equation. And not just speaking...
Well, that's actually not true. It is Class A waste right now.
No, I know, but
if you were to put all 700,000 tons of the material in the cell where we have deemed it could go,
right
now, that is all Class A waste. You're looking at 50,000 years down the road before it starts to increase in its limits to where it becomes a Class A waste that's got more radioactivity in it than it does when it's disposed of.
So that's why
I just want to make sure we're clear on this. The material that comes in here, and the NRC in 2009 defined this as Class A waste.
Right. Right. No, it is
a Class A waste.
Sure. No, let's stipulate that. And I think that everyone agrees that right now it is. The question is whether or not depleted uranium, beyond the fact that it, in 50,000 years it will get hotter, is different. You say it isn't. As long as it's Class A waste.
No, it will increase in its radioactivity. So the constituencies of it change.
Right.
During the decay process, it's no different. The uranium ore that you have in the mill in the hillsides of the Wasatch Front or down in Moab, where a lot of this material was most likely mined from,
yeah,
it's part of the decay process. So, you know, uranium ore that in the same time frame is going to continue to decay and go through this process. Do you know what it ends up when it's finally done decaying?
It becomes lead.
It becomes lead. You know, so it goes back down below the class B and C limits, and it's lead.
Yeah.
So it's part. It to me, it's a very fascinating process that you have this, you know, this substance that goes through a decay process, changes in its level of radioactivity and its constituencies, but eventually ends up as a lead. What's important to recognize, and I feel strongly about this, and I know as a company we do, is that this material be responsibly managed. That is in my opinion, that is what is of most concern. It's like material that we've taken from New Jersey neighborhoods that was used to backfill homes when they were constructed, and there was radioactive material in there, and children in those neighborhoods were getting sick. Energy Solutions came in, removed that material, disposed of it at Clyde, put clean fill in, and those kids don't get sick anymore. It's responsibly management for the environment, not only, you know, for the environment across the United States. We need to responsibly manage something that we've all had benefits from. We benefited from what this material was used for, whether it be for nuclear power, medicine, you know, therapies, the development of prescription drugs, and quite frankly, the bomb. I mean, that protected and preserved our country for the freedoms that we have. So I think that there's, it's more than just looking at, you know, at it coming to Utah. It's making sure that it can be responsibly managed. And this PA, this performance assessment, is designed and has been, you know, analyzed to ensure that if we do meet the criteria that's stipulated by this performance assessment, that Clyde is a safe and responsible place to manage this material and dispose of it.
Do you think it's unfair for any agency, any environmental group to expect 30, 40, 50,000 years down the line? I mean, is it hard to hold up to that kind of standard? I mean, and what, I'm wondering your sense of that. This whole deep time question comes up that, yes, right now it's Class A, but, you know, it won't be. And so can you be held accountable? Should you be held accountable as a company for something that long, that much further in the future?
You know, it's a really tough question. I don't think anybody's going to argue when you start trying to estimate deep time, when you're estimating 50,000 years down the road. One thing we do know for sure, if this material is disposed of at Clyde, it will become the responsibility of the federal government, not the state of Utah. And when you start talking about Lake Bonneville raising, as Matt was talking about, and discussing that, there'll be time to understand Lake Bonneville is rising. So, okay, do we need to remove this material? You know, it's below grade, but it certainly isn't feasible that it couldn't be removed if studies were said, you know what, this material is getting hotter, and because Lake Bonneville is raising, we probably need to remove this. The federal government will be able to determine that. The one question I do have on the Lake Bonneville theory, which I find interesting, is the elevation of Clyde is higher than the elevation of Salt Lake City. So if Lake Bonneville ever returned, I think we've got greater concerns to worry about as residents of the state of Utah, particularly Salt Lake City, of what we're going to do about, you know, Salt Lake City. That doesn't mean that we don't certainly take these issues very serious and question the deep time analysis of it. So, you know, the disposal method that would be used, yes, we do believe that, and I think geologists will tell you that when lake beds rise, there is a sediment that covers. I mean, I've seen it when I grew up in Moab and Ken's Lake, which is on the outskirts, as it would rise up and then it would drop back down. There was always sediment that covered areas where we had seen rocks in the past. So that theory is very possible. It could cover and further entomb the material where it's not an issue. The depleted uranium comes encased in steel containers. And when we place this below grade with a liner that's going to satisfy the performance assessment, we also grout those containers in place so there's no void space, which further stabilizes the material.
Mark, forgive me for interrupting, but we're running out of time, and I want to get to this final question. I asked Matt Pacenza whether he thought, in fact, the state was inclined to approve the proposal. He thought not. He's talked about the fact that Governor Herbert has expressed some skepticism about this kind of waste and whether it belongs here in Utah. Can you finally give me your sense of that?
My sense is that, and the governor has stated this, that, you know, this is a decision that will be made based on the performance assessment, based on the science, and a decision that will rest with the Department of Environmental Quality and the DRC, the director of the Division of Radiation Control.
Right.
What it boils down to is if we can answer these concerns and satisfy what, you know, third-party engineers and scientists have spent a lot of time analyzing, that do this for a living, that have studied this and understand it better than anybody in the world. If we've satisfied that criteria, and the performance assessment says, yes, Clive is suitable for it, then these individuals, individually and as a group, have stated this material can responsibly be disposed of at Clive, and it will be protected from harming the environment, workers, or the general public. And I'm confident in that. I'm confident in the work that we have done over the 30 years in disposing of material out at Clive. It is all Class A material that we dispose of there. These men and women do a tremendous job and great care in managing material. I'm out in Tennessee today where we have facilities and they're doing work. There's an on-site disposal site in Tennessee where they do the same thing. They dispose of this material, but they do it with protecting the environment, protecting the people and the general public as a first concern, and to responsibly manage it.
As you can tell by that music, we're out of time. Mark Walker,
absolutely,
Vice President of Marketing and Media Relations for Energy Solutions. Mark, thanks for the time.
Thank you, Doug. Appreciate it.
Radio West, a production of KEWR News, with thanks to Braden Child, technical direction from Tim Slover, the program produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.